for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now, here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you. It's Monday, March 11th. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals all over the nation and all over the world. We're getting more and more people listening in on this. The downloads are insane. What we're getting is amazing. We're so grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information, and boy, do we have a lot of it today that you can listen to in an audio format. Although I wish we were going to be doing more video because Kittle is wearing his pilot headset here so he can look like he's on here. It's hilarious, folks. We may have to use some of this video and some of the promotion stuff. But anyway, grateful to have all you all joining us. My co-host, Mark Helm, is in on the podcast. Mark, good to have you here, friend. He's eating lunch here. We won't make him unmute and do that. But anyway, it's good to have you, Mark, as well as Alice and then Bill Corbett and David Kittle. Love harassing him. Anyway, let's say a special thank you to our sponsors, Byte Software. If you're tired of long contrast, failed implementations, or having to change your process to fit your LOS, maybe it's time to see why Byte has so many happy clients. Check out the interview we did with Erin D. of Loan People. She was talking about that January 24th of this year, 2 months ago now. Really good. Also, Finastra, rely on automated email notifications for various stages of each loan process to access real-time pipeline view to easily search for loans, quickly access the necessary detailed information. Check out the podcast we did a while back. It's in our show notes. It's there. It's one that we got to get an update on. It's back in 2022. But anyway, looking forward to having. We're going to be inviting one of the top people from Finastra. Again, they're the largest fintech company in the world, largest fintech company. And their view of AI and some of the innovation that they're bringing is going to be very interesting. We're going to have them on and talking to them about it. Also, Total Expert. This has a built-in customer journey. They have built-in customer journeys that give lenders a starting place for nurturing campaigns. Listen to the interview we did with Dan Cantinelli and Melissa Wright of APM Mortgage. Great interview that we did back in November. Also, Lender Homepage is an all-in-one AI-powered platform that gives seamless front-end solution to your mortgage business of all sizes. Love what these guys are doing and what they're putting together. Really, it's all about converting more of your traffic to leads and actual closed loans. Check out the interview we did with Rocky Fortan and Quay Parker and on December 12th of this last year. Also, Trub, Richard Greiser at the Lenders One conference last week. They have a true income employment verification that is 90% cheaper than the other leading brand out there for income and employment verifications. Check them out. Really powerful. Also, Angel AI was with Pavon on Friday talking about what they're doing as far as revolutionizing the way mortgages are done. Special thank you goes to MBA. Had a chance to spend some time on last Monday with Bob Brooksmit in LA at the Lenders One conference. Got to talk about some of the things he brought out there. We're grateful for the MBA and all that they do to help us. Also, Lenders One, that was the summit we were at last week. Excellent conference, very well attended. And then we've got coming up this week in Louisville. I'm laughing because I was saying Louisville and Gil corrected me on that. But the Mortgage Collaborative, TMC, is having their event at the end of this month in Louisville. And we're looking forward to that. Mobility, MMI, Modex, and Knowledge Coop, iEmergence, all these are sponsors that we're so grateful to have. Joining us today, again, live is Alice Alvey, Les Parker, Matt Graham is recorded, as well as David Kittle. He's on here with his funky airline headset on, as well as Bill Corbett joining in. A lot of commentary. I'm looking forward to getting from these guys and gals. And let's get over to MBA's Mortgage Minute with Adam DeSanctis.
Hi, I'm Adam DeSanctis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. MBA pushed back vehemently last week following misguided assertions about closing costs and title insurance in a fact sheet released by the White House ahead of President Joe Biden's State of the Union address, as well as in a CFPB blog post posted on Friday morning in which it was suggested that closing costs are quote-unquote junk fees. In two press statements, NBA President and CEO Bob Brooksmith warned the CFPB against proceeding with any reforms on closing costs and title insurance, which would undermine consumer protections, increase risk, and reduce lender competition. What's odd about all of this is that closing costs are clearly disclosed to borrowers well before a home purchase on forms developed and prescribed by the Dodd-Frank Act and the CFPB itself. And the illogical use of the term junk fee contradicts even the White House's own definition, which cites the lack of disclosure of the fee being charged. We'll be keeping an eye on this and will vigorously oppose politically motivated proposals that only increase regulatory costs, reduce competition, and otherwise make it more difficult for Americans to get the credit necessary to achieve home ownership. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
I wonder if that is what, when you listen to that Biden's absolutely misguided comments about junk fees, it's just absurd. I wonder if that's why we just got the announcement. Kittle just made texted this over. Fudge steps down as HUD secretary. Just announced. Come on, Kittle. Where did you read that?
It's just hitting the wire right now, David.
Yeah, there we got it, right? I got to tell you, what was most interesting about the conference was Bob Brooksmith's comments about how disconnected this administration is and their housing policy. They say they're pro-housing, and what they're doing is undermining every aspect of the housing finance system that we love here. It's just astounding. I want to get more into that in a little bit. But David, thanks for texting that over. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's a big announcement. She says she wants to retire from public life at 71 years old. I get that. First African-American woman to serve as HUD secretary. Yeah. The timing is...
Timing is curious.
Curious. Suspect, I would say.
Suspect, yeah. I wonder. Very good. NBA, thank you for that update. Adam DeSantis, appreciate so much what you guys do for us each and every week. Again, really interesting. I can't wait to get into Bob Brooksmith's comments here in just a minute that he said while at the conference in L.A. Now it's time for the TM Spotlight in this week's Macro View of the Markets with Les Parker.
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Power Seller, making hedging easy.
Bricks won a race, chasing bucks can all over the place.
Sing it. We will rock you.
Gold hit record highs as China and other BRICS continued their buying spree. So why hoard gold? Under Russia's leadership, the BRICS, which includes many of the largest oil-producing countries, want to establish a global payment system to compete with the capricious advanced economies SWIFT system. Gold's rise also reflects doubt that the Fed will avoid a liquidity crisis unless it curtails selling treasuries. Regardless, the 10-year yield is in limbo with no momentum. Stay tuned to Shifting Money, as the BRICS say. These views are mine. Watch BRICS rock bucks at tmspotlight.com.
Yeah. Thank you, Les Parker. Always amazed at what he does with that. So anyway, be sure to sign up Les's newsletter, TM Spotlight. You could do so by going to tmspotlight.com, and you can sign up for the paid version, get it for free if you put in the word power for Power Seller in the sign up code. Good job. Matt Graham's going to be here with us via a recording this week. Want to get his comments about what's going on. Nice little rally going on in the markets, even a little bit. We're down at 40992 as we are broadcasting here live. Let's get an update from Matt Graham.
This is Matt Graham with the MBS Live Market Update. Bonds had a great week last week, breaking more definitively out of the narrow sideways range that had dominated the week before that. In fact, the breakout really began on that previous Friday, but it continued into the new week, starting mainly on Tuesday with friendly economic data in the form of ISM's non-manufacturing index. And just general bond buying momentum that was in place even before then, with some help from Europe in the overnight session. But as far as the ISM data itself, it wasn't so much about the headline PMI, although it was helpful, coming in at 52.6 versus 53.4 previously, as it was about the subcomponents, especially the prices paid component falling to the lowest levels in more than a year, and the employment index also falling to the lowest levels since 2021. that was well received by the market and sort of made investors think that we could get a more friendly jobs report on Friday. We'll get to that in a moment. As the week continued, we had testimony from Fed Chair Powell before both the House and the Senate on consecutive days. There were no major bombshells in any of that, nor would we expect there to be. And instead, the surrounding movement ended up being about momentum and about economic data. ADP employment, not a big deal this month, and generally less of a big deal as time goes by. But JOLTS, Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, that showed job openings below 9 million yet again. And perhaps more importantly, the quits rate, which measures the rate at which people are quitting their jobs, continued to decline. And that is something that is broadly consistent with the approach of economic contraction. People are less likely to give up their jobs when they're worried the economy might be souring. So a positive anecdote for rates. Really, anytime you have a negative anecdote for the economy, you're going to get that positive anecdote for rates. And then on Thursday, not as relevant of an economic data day, but no major whammies from jobless claims. And arguably, unit labor costs and non-farm productivity didn't do any damage either. Perhaps labor costs coming in a bit lower than expected even helped to some extent, but that's for quarter four of last year, so not hugely relevant to the present. Friday, of course, was the big to-do with the jobs report, and it was very interesting due to the revision. First off, 275 versus 200K. That was the headline, and that's the type of headline that would normally do a good amount of damage to the bond market and make rates go higher. In this case, that did not happen, and one of the key reasons was the revision to the previous month. It had come in initially at 353,000 and was revised down to 229. That seems like an impossibly large revision, but if you review the page of historical revisions to non-farm payrolls, you'll see they do actually get bigger than that sometimes. It's not a common revision by any means, but it is within the range of possibilities, and it also happens to align with some of the analysis that's been floating around out there about distorted seasonality affecting January's economic data, not just for non-farm payrolls, but for other reports as well. And that sort of put everything in a more normal perspective, where instead of seeing jobs spike up to 350K, we're instead seeing them hang around in the 220 to 280 range, which would be more in line with the prevailing trend. They would need to go lower for the employment data to be helping rates in a significant way. But because of that revision, and also because wages came in much lower than expected and much lower than previously, bonds were able to rally shortly after the jobs data came out. They gave up a fair amount of the gains by the end of the day. That was no longer about reacting to the jobs data as much as it was about generally leveling off ahead of this week's key economic data, which will be the Consumer Price Index tomorrow morning, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. A highly consequential report anytime it comes out, but especially this time, because here too, we have something that can comment on that residual seasonality that may have distorted numbers in an unfriendly way for rates back in February. So if this unwinds that, then we could see fairly aggressive movement away from this recent sideways range, just over 4% in terms of 10-year Treasury yields, or just under 7% in terms of mortgage rates. That's going to do it for today. Back to you.
Thank you much, Matt. All right, let's get into some discussion on what's going on. Mark Helm, any comments you have right out of the gate on interest rates? And then Mark, what?
I think basically, David, it's more the usual that we've been hearing. I'm still optimistic that things are going to improve closer to the election date, no matter who's running for office. There is always some improvement on things in our business. I don't remember that not ever happening in my past for elections, major elections. So I'm hoping that'll be the case to give some people some relief. I'm totally dismayed a little bit about what's happening in our economy right now, what's happening politically, and how it's going to have effect on us going down the road, because it just seems like you remember the old thing, who's on first? I feel like we're having that battle right now. Who's going to solve the problems for us in the future? So I guess we'll see. But I wish I had real positive things to say, but I'm in a look and see attitude right now.
Yeah, watch and see. Bill Corbett.
So a question for Mark. When you talk about the Fed, Is that the same group that's now being called that little outfit that sets interest rates?
That little outfit. That is hilarious.
I love that, Bill. I love that.
Yeah.
That I assume everybody heard that that is now how our president is referring to the Fed.
That little outfit. There were so many notable.
How do you take anything seriously after a comment like that?
Well, let me ask you gentlemen something. I got to ask this question. Did y'all think the State of the Union was as comical as I thought it was?
Oh,
I thought it ought to have been on Saturday Night Live rather than being on prime time for State of the Union.
And so let's get the stick. I want to get more into, we're going to go into the political side of things a little bit more than we normally do in just a minute. But Bill, any more comment about the markets last week? And then over to Kittle and then off to Alice.
I think everything obviously said was spot on. And we're still in the couple of key pieces of data that they keep looking at to justify. I'm not a total conspiracist, but the fact that, again, non-farm payroll continues to have significant revisions downward. Yeah, duh.
Oh, duh.
Again, just keep channeling in the from the going out and getting business perspective. Just go get loans. These rates are not astronomical one way or the other.
Back in the normal range of what they were for years and years. Yeah. Go get loans. Yeah. Yeah. Go get loans. But then the housing inventory, that is a significant issue. But the good news is we're seeing more and more new homes being built all over the place here in Austin, Texas. What was really interesting, something that Mike Frattantoni said on Tuesday when he gave an economic update. So one of the things that Frattantoni said from the platform was, is any from Austin, Texas? Because rent payments are going up across the nation. Except here in Austin, we're starting to see rents go down because we're overbuilt. So we need to get more housing on the market. I think there's a very much that is getting recognized. We're talking to, picked up a new client as a builder that's wanting to get a mortgage company up and running because they want to take advantage of it. I got to tell you, there's some optimism for our building supply as well if we don't just regulate the heck out of it. Mr. Kittle, let's get your comments on the market, and we'll go ahead. Just come on, put on those headphones again. I wish we had that video going. That was really good, guys. He was looking pretty studly with the glasses, with the aviator glasses and the David Clark headset, headset.
I'm just jealous because you and Alice have this great big setup with all the rest of that stuff. So
yeah, Alice has got her new Yeti out, or her old Yeti. She dug it out of the, blew the dust off it, plugged it in. Can't wait to see how that sounds. Market commentary, Mr. Kittle.
I don't know. There's so much here. I think it's interesting, number one, to go back to what we said earlier, that Marcia Fudge is stepping down as HUD secretary. The timing is a little strange, but she states she's 71 and she wants to withdraw from the public sector. So sometimes I actually get that.
Yeah. If I had a boss like Biden, I'd withdraw quickly too. Yeah, that little outfit that sets interest rates. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so you take what Bill said, and then Mark's comment. It's both hilarious, the State of the Union, and pathetic. It really was sad, pathetic. It's just horrible. There was nothing in there about the state of our economy or the State of the Union. I think we talk about the jobs numbers. I've said that the last couple of weeks, if you recall, challenging the fact that put this number out and then immediately we revise it down, but it gives the administration a soundbite to go out in the news media to pick it up, that look at all the jobs we created when they really didn't.
They really didn't.
So it's, you want to talk about misinformation. Last comment is, I'm totally on board with what Mark said. We're going to get a revision down, if we get one, in rates toward the election. Look, inflation's back. Gas is up 40 cents a gallon in the last 10 days here in Louisville alone. 40 cents a gallon. I looked this up. This is actual statistics. All right. You can Google it. The average consumer uses 16.7 gallons a week. All right.
Wow.
You go up 40 cents. That's at $347.36 a year out of your pocket more just in that increase on that number. But that's net. What you really need to look at is you got to make $580 to pay for a 40 cent gas increase. That's real inflation that hits you, including what's going on at the grocery store and every place else. They can't stimulate the economy by lowering rates when they're trying to kill inflation. It would be the oxy of all morons.
Good job. Alice Alvey with your new Yeti. Got your new Yeti light microphone. Let's go hear that thing. Come on. What you got? A commentary.
All right. Here you go. Should be sounding pretty good.
You do.
Actually, it's my Yeti I've had for many years. I finally just had a time to get set up properly for the show here today. But it's interesting. First of all, you guys are stealing my headlines for my segment with the State of the Union and what happened there and housing inventory. But it'll make a perfect segue. But I agree. I just have a question more for the group. It sounded like less is peace. And I was going to, right after it finished, I said, I got to go back and re-listen to that. And his sounded a little more pessimistic about the future, that we may not be seeing an interest rate decline. I would agree with you all that typically there is one right before the election, but I was curious about that. So we'll just be watching, right? We think it's status quo. We're going to be staying in this range. Stop holding out on deals or thinking you're going to see the number 5 anytime soon, because that is not happening. And at least from my perspective, I'm no market expert. I'm just an old mortgage hag who's seen a few things. But what do you think about that? And I want to go back and listen. Was Les a little less optimistic about a future rate drop?
There's nobody that knows him better than Corbett. So
I think Les is in between. Of part of it is that the shorter term outlook, maybe rates are down a bit, maybe not, but there's the growing concern about the longer term and both consumer spending, right? One of the big numbers now is that credit card interest payments are now basically equal to mortgage interest payments. And the trajectory of that is straight up. The government spending path is straight up, and that either one is unsustainable. Both of them at the same time, I think, is where Les, and I agree with him, pessimism is coming from, because that doesn't feel like it just slowly works itself out. It ends in an ugly way. And the ugly way is what happens when people decide they don't want to buy U.S. treasuries.
That is a scary thought. And yeah, no kidding. It's a dive. Yeah. Yes, Alice, you did pick that up. That was not an imaginative thought. There was a little bit of a pickup, which is normally Les is a glass half full kind of guy. And I picked up a little bit of a concern on that. And that's got a lot of concern. What's really interesting, yes, go ahead. Yes, Mr. Kittle, yes.
I think you said, obviously I didn't attend it, but that Mr. Brokesmith from the NBA made comments on his speech at the L1 conference last week. So, and part of it, and I don't want to misquote him or you, but you said that normally NBA, they've recently supported the Democrats because
they more lean towards the Democrat. Bob did say that, yes.
Okay, so I would challenge that totally. And I think you could go back to this administration, to Trump, and to the Obama-Biden administration, all the way back to Bush. None of them had a housing policy that was pro-housing. We haven't had a housing policy since the early 2000s, even we had one then. Right. And we drive this economy, this industry does, and all the ancillary businesses around it, we always have, and that are pushing everybody to rent. It's an abhorrent environment. If you want to build a house, you can't afford the land, can't afford the lumber, the labor.
And the regulatory. It was the interview you did, Kittle, of the head of the Builder Association that said the minimum regulatory cost built into a house is 30%. And in California, it's as much as 50% of the cost of a home is the regulatory cost. That is insane. I'll never forget that interview you did of him.
I know, but to make the comment that we're leaning one way or the other because it's better is I challenge that 100.
Bob did I think he did a really good speech, and I think he laid it out fair and balanced as much as he could for where he's at. Because what he said at the Lenders One Summit conference was we have an administration that says with their mouth, talking away, that they are pro-housing, and then you look at all the policies, and it is anything but pro-housing. And I think what we have is an industry that is even more. Forget policy. Let's go just talking at where we are as an industry. The MBA statistic, this is empirical data, is we've had 6 back-to-back quarterly losses up until the beginning of this year. It's very certain that Q1 is going to be a loss. Q2, very likely. That means 8 back-to-back, 2 years of back-to-back losses is not sustainable. It's causing to call in question. Then you throw in, Bob Brooks spoke about Basel III and what's going on, the higher capital requirements that are, I've got to go research this out. I had lunch with our old friend, Andy Schell, on Saturday, and he's researching out the Basel III and exactly where things are at. So we're going to get a report on that coming up. But it's really interesting that the higher capital requirements are coming. Literally, Bob said there is a proposal where even though you have PMI on a loan, they're not going to count the insurance, but put the higher risk capital, even though that there's a PMI payment on there. There is a lot of things that are headwinds that we're facing as an industry. But the biggest one is we just have too much cost. Costs are too high to originate. There's no way anyone's going to touch the LO comp. Everyone can say, we got to visit LO comp, got to visit. As long as there's companies out there paying sign-on bonuses to someone who is closing one or two loans a month, which is abysmal in production, and they're paying a sign-on bonus for that, that means you don't touch that part of the formula. We've got to focus in on operations, and we're going to have eight back-to-back quarters. Unheard of. Never even seen anything like it. Never had two back-to-back quarters, and now we're up to eight. That means our industry is on the thinnest ice possible. When I'm talking to warehouse lenders, what came out of the conference, love to get, I'm going to end with this a little bit, is that somewhere between conservatively 75% of the mortgage companies that the warehouse lenders that I'm talking to, which is a pretty good sampling. I talked to Mike Frattantoni. They just did a study on this. We're going to get a copy of that study and have Mike come on and talk about it. That 75% or greater, I'm hearing as much as 90%, of the IMBs are not profitable, blowing through profitability covenants. So why have a covenant in there if you're not going to enforce it? So Mike said the most amazing thing that several of the warehouse lenders said, the new covenant is, tell us what you think you're going to lose this quarter, and we'll set that as the covenant. It's not profitability. Just tell us what you're going to lose. Don't go over that, because if you go over that, you lose more than what you state you're going to lose. That's a covenant break. That's insane. Now, okay, so if there's strong enough capital in some of these companies, they have adequate capital and they can continue to lose $5-6 million a year and they'll deplete their balance sheet, liquid balance sheet by that much. There's still adequate capital in some of these companies to last for another day, which goes to the point. Who was it with on our panel here of our group here that was saying that it's going to distill down to 5-15 companies? Was that you, Alice, that were saying that? Did you heard that? I'm trying to think of who it was that someone said that. Was it you, Kittle?
No.
Someone was telling me recently that I heard that just recently where they think there's a very distinct possibility. Pardon?
Voices in your head. That's
right. Yeah, we've got some of that going on too. But that we're there, the goal is to get this thing down to a very small number of providers out there, independent mortgage bankers. So it's very interesting where we're at. But one thing that's the warehouse lending community says, if you're losing money, plan on personal guarantees coming back on the table. A lot of people negotiated away the personal guarantees. Those are becoming back on the table. And that's going to cause lenders to have another pause before they personally put their name on to guarantee the performance of their company in a time. That could trigger a lot more mergers and acquisitions, which I think is, based on what we're seeing, very distinctly possible. Alice, it's looking good for Union Home. Companies like Union Home, very profitable. They've been profitable. You're struggling like anyone else out there, but you guys are overall well-managed, and Bill's doing a great job through these challenging times.
Yes, and it's a growth mindset, right? I think, too, some of the things that you mentioned is with the back-to-back losses for lenders, they just didn't adjust. I think there were a lot of companies out there that thought rates, that they didn't really look at the math. Their refis were insane. That was not normal. And so there had to be a correction to a more consistent purchase balance. And now it was totally the writing on the wall that we were going to get to zero refis, folks. That was out there. When you see 2% and 3% interest rates, guess what? Those folks aren't going anywhere. This is not a surprise. And so there's probably a lot of companies, like you said, were resting on equity that they had saved. And sooner or later, that money runs out and they didn't make the adjustments necessary to keep their operations efficient.
Yeah, it is very true. Bill, you want to interject something fast, Bill?
To Alice's comment, it would be fascinating to go back now and look at folks' business plan for 2023 and how many of those plans started off with, we're going to do well and thrive by growing market share. But nobody told you how they were going to do that.
Yeah. Hope isn't a strategy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we hope to do this. We hope to grow this. I say this for all our listeners out there. If you're a loan officer, do not jump ship to another company, assuming that they're going to pay a sign-on bonus because you don't know if they're going to be around. Do your diligence on the companies you're going to be working for, that you are working with, and that you're going to be working potentially for, that recruiting you away. We are in some very unsettling times. Be wise at what you do.
To the other side of that, the company needs to do due diligence on the LO they're hiring.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Hopefully they're doing that. Hopefully they're using the tools, Bodex and MMI and iEmergent, to be doing that. Exactly right. Our advertisers provide that intelligence. Unfortunately, we don't have quite the same level of transparency as you look back to be able to look at on privately held companies. We do not have the ability for an LO to look back at some of that. All right. Alice, it's time for the legislative update. Alice Alvey here, Vice President of Partner Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage. Amazing company, doing well, growing with the legislative update. Alice, good to have you here with your Yeti microphone.
All right. I guess I'm not going to live that down. So hopefully all of you have a good visual of that.
Yeah, we do.
Just Dave's going to have to wear his pilot's headset from now on with his pink hat. Okay.
With his pink hat and his aviator glasses. Yes.
All right. So I'm going to go back to the State of the Union address, which is along the same theme as what you all were mentioning. There were some legislative things that would have to be implemented for the things that the White House mentioned would be housing related. So when I was looking at the list, and others have broken this down to, there's the legislative bucket, and then there's the regulatory bucket that they talked about. Anything, all those items about contributing money, for starters, where's the money coming from?
Coming from.
You have to, all those programs take funding. And one of them in particular that was brought up, the $25,000 down payment assistance for first generation home buyers. We've talked about that on this show. So that bill was out there in 2021. It went nowhere because there was no money then. There isn't going to be any magic money now to get this thing through. Not to mention when the bill that was already published back then. So the new one now is H.R. 4231, but this is a reintroduction of something that was back in the previous congressional session. And how do you define a document, a first generation home buyer? How do you have enough money in any of these programs to really make a difference? And so for me, when I was looking at this list, these are just little drips of water in what the real problem is. And Dave, you said it earlier, which is we have to figure out the housing supply shortage. They're just, that's the issue. To really untangle housing, going, it takes big initiatives, big solutions, not little drip pieces that we know are never going to get through for funding anyway. Another thing I did want to talk about on this show was the title waiver pilot that was mentioned. This too is just a small measure. It's not really going to be something that becomes a big, massive waiving of title insurance. We all know that there's definitely value in the title policy for the mortgage lenders themselves. I can't imagine not having that coverage for the rare times I do need it. It's something that we need. But again, just small drops in the bucket, not really addressing the big issues. I didn't know if anyone wanted to comment on that before I move on.
On the title insurance issue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On any of it, on those two issues, yeah.
We're making the best loans we've made in 30 years. We go back and research title, I guess 30 or 60 years is what the title research does. We reinsure the same property over and over again for the same full amount every time, whether it's a purchase. And I get it, you got to go in and see if they've built anything. But if you've put something over a property line, generally, what do they do 99.9% of the time? They insure over it every time. My driveway's a little over, the bass move this, a fence, whatever it is. It's no big deal. But yet, I think the title companies just filed for a rate increase. And so that's the biggest issue or the biggest cost on the HUD-1 being an old school or still calling it a HUD one. So I think it's something that the industry along with LO Comp needs to look at.
Yep.
That's a great point. And it's the CD, right? For those of you who are wondering what he's talking about with the HUD one. It's the closing disclosure. But I think that's a great point. So I like the coverage aspect is what I was referencing. But to your point, David, I think that it is a big cost out there. And so did you want to add something, Dave, before I move on?
They build it.
So I think, Dave, you hit on the key point in there to me, which is for the title insurance, which I'm looking at a CD right now, is the largest of the costs, is filed, as in rates are set, as in, I don't know, maybe too much government influence. Why is title insurance not a sliding cost scale based on the level of protection that the consumer feels like they need? Why is it looked at as an on-off switch when everybody has different risk tolerances?
I'll throw something else out there since we're on this. Why did the title insurance industry lobby against the attorney opinion letter? Hard. Even though Fannie accepted why they do that, because it costs less and because it did basically the same thing. Now, are there tweaks and assurances and things that needed to be added to it? Of course. But I've said this since I was PAC chairman at MBA 2004, 2006. It's never about the money, Bill. It's always about the money. So
it's never about the money, but it's about the money.
It's about
well
the money.
Said. Yeah. All right, Alice, continue
All
on
right.
there. Yeah, so much.
Last but not least for today, I did want to at least point out the VA interest rate reduction refinance, middle of the road, like sub-proposed rule that came back out. I thought this was so interesting. It's just a side note that, so for those of you who aren't familiar with this, VA had a proposal out there a while ago we all commented on, and they've just come back with a supplemental proposal to say, hey, wait a minute, we want to clarify something. The net tangible benefit requirement that we have, and for those of you who aren't familiar with it, just very briefly, it's basically you take the cost of the VA loan, and then as a lender, I also show the customer the savings per month and the P&I. And then I say, okay, if you were going to save $50 a month in principal and interest, then, and you were going to spend a couple thousand dollars to get this loan, how many months does it take you to recover that cost? So we call that the recoupment. And VA says they have to recoup that cost in 36 months. For decades, the math is the math. It's just math, right? It's 36 months saving $50 and this number over here. And so I'm reading the VA summary. I'm going, who's doing the math? VA has to close a loophole because there's people out there who found a way to make fuzzy math. And apparently there were lenders who were including the two-month window between note date and payment date as part of the net tangible benefit calculation. So my note to all of you for this supplemental proposed rule is comments are due by, I believe it's May 6th. And it's nice to comment if you want to say, hey, I think we could just keep things. I like the revision because it clarifies things. And for those of you who are doing it the right way in the same old way, then you're fine. There's no changes. But for those companies who may have been doing some fuzzy math and trying to make the net tangible benefit look better than it really was by saying, oh, they didn't have to make these two payments, so I'm going to put that over here on this side of the math equation and make it count that as a net tangible benefit for the customer. So that's going to go away, it looks like, as VA cleans this up to use first payment date as opposed to note date. So that's my two cents on that one, Dave. I thought it was just interesting going, oh, duh, there's people messing with the policy, so they got to clean it up.
They got to surprise.
It just goes with rules are there for the people who are breaking them already.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Anyway,
so true.
That's my fun spot on that. Back to you.
Good job. Appreciate it so much, Alice. Be sure to say hi to Bill and the team there at Union Home. What a great group. Now let's listen to some mortgage update from our friends from Calc.
Today, I want to talk to you about one client who had a situation that is the perfect fit for the trade-in mortgage. Nikki Jame from Cross Country Mortgage had a client come to her and say that she was immunocompromised, meaning she couldn't let people tour her home while she was still living in it. Nikki introduced her to Calc and the trade-in mortgage so that she was able to buy and move into her new home before she sold her original home. After she sold her home for full market value, she said to Nikki that this was the perfect product for her. She and her husband have wanted to do this for a long time, but were finally able to do it because the buy before you sell process made it safe for them to do so. If you have borrowers who could benefit from a buy before you sell process, please reach out to us at calcinc.com. Again, that's calqueinc.com.
I want to get over to Mark. Mark, did you see Chris Whalen's article that he published over the weekend? It's in the show notes. I'm going to publish it in the show notes. It's really interesting, but it's in the comments. Fascinating about how the Biden administration is penalizing lenders and consumers for early payoffs. Did you see that? I'd love to get your thoughts. What's that going to do for MSRs?
It's interesting you mention that. Yes, I saw that. But if you think about any penalties anybody is creating for early payoffs, how does the government know in any regulations they put out there? How do they know that's affecting somebody who's trying to do a rate reduction refi, which does damage MSRs when that happens, but also it damages a company if it doesn't happen because you want to retain the MSR going forward. And if you don't, it's going to pay off if somebody sees a better rate, et cetera. But I think the blanket approach the administration is taking for early payoffs doesn't play into fact the thing that people are doing, like paying off loans, consolidating loans, normal things that they do when they sell property, consolidating a home equity loan in another loan where they've done repairs on a property, purchase money seconds, all kind of things like that. And I think it's being short-sighted and has had basically bad advice on telling them to look at something that way. That's my opinion. I'd be interested in everybody else's opinion about that, but that's the opinion I have.
Yeah. Alice, any thoughts on that? None? Okay. We'll go right over there. Bill, thoughts?
The government is trying to manipulate something. Therefore, I don't trust it.
Yeah.
I started laughing before you finished, Bill.
I know. Bill's dry humor is amazing.
They're trying so many little pinprick things, and some at least they're good. They're putting it out in public with the first time home buyer deal. And right. So the one I like is, oh, we're going to give you a $5,000 tax credit for 2 years. Okay. I'm going to put my credit hat back on and go, yeah, I don't know. The effect of a payment increase after 2 years, I'm not sure how that plays out in the underwriting space. They're just, we talked about it before, that it's a supply problem. And they keep trying to play around on manipulating the demand side. And it's not going to work.
I'm going to give you guys a comment. Y'all have heard me say this on this show a couple of times already. You know, I still say my favorite movie of all, Shawshank Redemption, when Morgan Freeman says, you got to get busy living or get busy dying. Okay, in our business, we got to get busy working or get busy dying. Because there are ways to make our business profitable and people just aren't getting there yet. And they need to focus on those ways. I'm sitting right now in a very small mortgage company in Alabama trying to help it survive. And I want to tell you right now, I've been able to bring a dozen things to play that they haven't thought about here. That's going to make this company very vibrant in a short period of time. And I'm proud of that. But how many other companies are out there that could do the same thing if they just focused on the things they need to do to make themselves and light of somebody that said this once great before, point. Make themselves great again. And you cannot have tunnel vision and look at the way it's been. You got to look at the way it's now and adapt to it and deal with it on a go forward. If not, you're going to fail. And failure is not an option in our business because we have to provide for the American dream and provide home ownership to people. So we need to be out there working our fannies off, making our businesses work and making sure we provide the opportunities to our customers. Yeah. I'm sorry. Right. I was on a soapbox there.
That's a soapbox I'll join you on, Mark, because we cannot lose sight of what we have as a mission and a goal for our industry and for America. And that's providing housing for Americans. And I get very concerned about this administration's approach to housing, what they're trying to do to the fundamentals, the fabric of this housing finance system. And very good concern. I think I look at the article, but I encourage every one of our listeners, go Richard Christopher Whalen, W-H-A-L-E-N. Google him, connect with him, follow him. He writes some of the better stuff that's out there. I really respect. He's one of the smarter guys. He's more of a Wall Street guy, but he has a unique perspective. Bill?
So I want to connect two things that we've been talking about, right? So one, to your point, in Christopher Whalen's article, he talks about, and I'm quoting the article, Biden administration is quietly telling lenders not to offer lower mortgage rates to consumers. Point number one. Point number two, in what just has come out from the CFPB and the junk fees, and when they're talking about junk fees and junk fees, they're morphing together and they're including discount points in there.
I know.
This is all orchestrated, folks. This is not one-off people expressing opinions. This is a coordinated plan. And then the other thing is to the CFPB's commentary on junk fees, and I think Brooksmit was spot on. Can they go back and read the TRID legislation that they wrote? So let me simplify it for the CFPB, because to be fair to them, 1,000-plus pages is a lot to read. So I'm sitting here looking at a loan estimate. The loan estimate is like a menu in a restaurant. You sit down, you see what the choices are and how much they cost. If at the end of the meal, you've bought 5 bottles of wine, that's not the restaurant's problem that your bill cost more than you thought it would when you walked in the door. They told you how much the wine cost. We have so over-disclosed and so break down at the most minute level what the fees are, they're barking up the wrong tree.
Alice, you're nodding your head. Agree? Comments on that?
Oh, I agree that it's their form. They did all the consumer studies on it to claim that this is the right form. And I completely agree with you, Bill. I think we're there already. They get full disclosure. They get told time and time again about any changes in fees as things go on. That whole process is so locked down to make it where the customer can shop effectively.
Yep. Yep. Very good. Man, I could go on and on. This podcast has been really fun today. Kittle had to drop out. He had a TMC call that he's went to. And I want to just say a big thank you to anyone. Mark, anything you want to add to the comments here? Good soapbox, Mark. I'm glad you got on it.
I'm going to make a comment I made a couple of times already. Maybe I'm just, I don't know, maybe I'm drinking my own Kool-Aid, but I really think we're getting better and better at talking about what's happening in our industry. And I love the comments everybody's sharing. And I don't think we're necessarily playing off each other, but we're enhancing what each other says when we talk about things and making points that I think need to be made to our listeners out there that they need to carry into their day-to-day business. And I couldn't be prouder to be a member of this group.
Yeah. It's an honor to be with this group. I love all the commentary. Newest edition, Mr. Corbett, you're doing a great job. Thank you for your commentary. Alice, you've been here since the beginning. Oh my gosh, what would we do without your perspective on things? It's been so good. And Mark and Corbett and Kittle just continues to add the humor that in his commentary, along with his perspective that he has had from being at the NBA, as he was, as did Bill Cosgrove. And I think when you need to come in and serve, we're in interesting times, listeners. Pay attention to the company you're working for. The company may be a lot stronger than the company you do not know. Before you make go out and start jumping ship, check out as much as you can. If you have any questions, call us. We have insights into what's going on with many lenders. You go on and on about all this, but I want to say thank you to the panelists who've been here today. Alice, appreciate it. Awesome job. Love hearing that new microphone. Sounds so crisp. And then Bill Corbett, thanks for being the newest member to the group. Barty, I love your thoughts on it.
Pleasure.
And thank you for bringing up. And then it was so much fun when Kittle's going into the HUD one. You're bringing up the, you and Alice keep us on what kind of help make the interpretation on there, the LEs. So thank you. Everyone, have a great rest of your week. We'll look forward to having you back here next week. Share this with others, and we'll talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.